Podtacular episode 322, Forward Unto Dawn episode 3, for October 19th, 2012. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
I'm your co-host, Brent Gamer.
And this week we have returning Halo fan for life. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And joining us for episode 3 of our Forward Unto Dawn coverage is Isaac Frankel from Forward Unto Dawn.
How's it going, everyone?
The website. Not the live action series that we're talking about, but the website.
Definitely an important clarification to make.
Yes, with the train in the background. So, we have these two gentlemen on to help talk about Forward Unto Dawn. You guys know that Halo Fan for Life was on last time, and he's definitely put up some more analysis and screen caps. So, I don't know if we'll be pulling directly from those tonight, but he definitely goes into some pretty big details, most of which we'll try to cover tonight. But Isaac, you when was the last time you were on the show?
I think it was a while ago. I don't actually remember what we talked about. I think it was a general fiction episode. You did the series of three, I think.
Must have been a while ago because I don't remember that off the top of my head.
Yes, it definitely was a while ago. So, it was before I moved to Chicago. So
give the listeners a refresh on what exactly it is that you do.
I write for forwarduntodawn.com. We do analysis pieces of the Halo universe, and we attempt to dive essentially really deep into the lore and highlight some of the things that people may not have noticed or seen themselves. And I guess as a recent highlight, we also recently launched a Kickstarter to publish a book covering the Halo fan community over the last decade.
Like a great project.
Yeah. And we actually posted it on our website a couple days ago, and you've actually have gone well above your pledge or your requirement for that you request on, or whatever that's called. I'm sorry, I'm not in the lingo of Kickstarters at the moment.
Yeah, that's fine. This is my first time really getting deeply involved with it as well. I've only backed two projects before this, but we just recently had some new backers, so I think we just within the last couple hours overshot our 400% mark of our pledged goal.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely really thrilling to see the support that the community has kind of given to us. It was really unexpected and awesome, quite frankly. So really, thank you, everyone who supported the project and who might support it in the future.
Very nice. We will have you on a little bit later to talk about the project in more detail and talk about kind of what kind of people you're going to get on, what media format you're looking at doing, and all that stuff. But in the meantime, we have a new episode of Forward Unto Dawn to talk about. And to start this one, I'm actually going to start with a clip today. Since there's some pretty interesting things going on with Cortana, so let's take a listen.
I hate you, Cortana.
Stop it. I've made up my mind.
If I'm going to die aboard this ship, then Chief will suffer the same fate as me.
Cortana, stop.
You sacrificed everything for him.
Control yourself.
I can't. This isn't right. Something is...
Something slowed us down. Something interesting.
I need to think.
Thinking is what's killing you.
So, creepy bit.
Who knew that AIs could smoke crack?
Is that what you think that is, Brent?
Yeah, she's like fighting with herself. It's internal conflict. Like true internal conflict. Rampancy. She's going nuts.
Oh yeah, definitely. She has a split personality. We see it right there.
Yeah, that's really fascinating because the first time I watched it, it was hard to kind of to pick apart the different personalities because they're both voiced by Jen Taylor. But if you really listen closely, you can hear some very, very subtle differences in the delivery that indicate that it's definitely Halsey and Cortana. So it's Cortana dealing with her memories of Halsey in a much more direct fashion.
Hmm.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
That is.
There's definitely...
So at which point, or which voice do you think is Cortana's and which one's Halsey? Because it's almost like... In this case, would the Cortana voice be the one that wants to basically kill Chief and is the one that at the end saying thinking is what's killing you? You think that one's Cortana or you think that one's Halsey?
I think that sounds all too accurate to the two characters that we know. And then there's also the line, I don't know if this is verbatim, but it's, what is it? I think Halsey says Cortana's name. I don't exactly remember the quote, but
I didn't quite catch that in here. I'd have to listen to it again.
Yeah, this was only my third time listening to it, so I usually invest a lot more into picking apart things like this before I go and talk about them.
It seems like the slightly deeper, more forceful voice would be that closer to Halsey, whereas the more somewhat innocent and a little bit higher pitched voice is that of Cortana.
Yeah, well, the one that says in the very beginning, I think it's, I hate you. That's the very first line you hear. That, to me, sounds like the rampant Cortana.
So are we saying the rampant Cortana is Cortana, or is that Halsey?
Cortana.
Both?
Oh, yeah.
But it is Cortana.
I mean, it's all technically
it's Halsey Cortana.
But I think it's...
From what I see it, I mean, Cortana is basically Halsey just in a digital form, and it's just a kind of a split brain thing.
Yeah, but Cortana's also got her own personality and brain or whatever you want to think. I mean, she's different than Halsey.
Yeah, just because an AI is created from the brain of a unique, previously living individual doesn't mean that they replicate that person exactly.
Right.
And I think what I see it as is Cortana is going rampant, but then the more human side of her personality, the side that literally is the memories of Halsey and her recreation of who Halsey is within her own coding, I guess, that's the one who is more or less keeping her sane. She's the voice of reason for Cortana as she's slipping into this insanity.
All right.
I think you can also reference the trailer that came out. I don't know if it's a trailer it was up on YouTube and then I think they took it down and then someone put it back up, but Halsey is speaking with someone. I don't know who it is.
Oh, that's a leak. We're not talking about it here.
Okay. No leaks, but,
no leaks.
Sorry.
Oops.
Sorry. Someone posted it in our forums and I had to move it. We're not going to talk about it. But yeah, this Cortana thing, there's definitely an issue with her. What we're going to see in the game is going to be kind of interesting. I didn't know that she was... It would be interesting to see at what point she is this unstable. Like, what point during the 4 years and 7 or 9 months, whatever it is, during this voyage that this is happening.
You know, quite honestly, what I would really like to see... Karen Travis did a great short story on Cortana, Human Weakness in Halo Evolutions. And it really got into the head of this entity who exists and was created from the memories of another previously existing entity. And quite frankly, I think it would be fascinating if she were to do another short story exploring Cortana's time aboard the Forward Unto Dawn with Chief and Cryo.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's an interesting thought.
Hey, getting back to the episode, what'd you guys think about, the red tendrils of light and energy coming off of the blue orb.
I was gonna ask that as the next question too. Is that her trying to reach out to the chief and try to, because the one voice was like, well, if I'm going to die on this boat, then I'm taking Chief with me. So is it basically her trying to lash out? And it could almost look like fingers or a hand almost.
Yeah.
It brings up another interesting question. Origins, part one, no, part two. But in Halo Legends, Cortana projects herself out as a more or less a full-scale hologram of a human. And she wipes the frost away from Chief's cryotube. I mean, physically, like, brushes it away. I don't know if that is within her mind or if it is actually physically happening, but I immediately thought of that when I saw these things, like, jutting out towards the cryotube. It's Cortana reaching out, and the redness obviously indicates the rampancy, and to me that means it's the more malevolent side of her in this current mental state. And then the Halsey side that we previously discussed is the rational side that pulls her back and reminds her that, or tells her that there are other things to think about when she picks up when she detects Requiem.
Okay. we're kind of drawing a lot of dead air on this one, so I think we're just going to move on for now and realize that Cortana is going rampant. And now we see that we have this evidence that has a split personality. One part of her is trying to basically commit suicide, and the other one is trying to hold on for dear life. So we'll see how that plays out through the rest of the intros in Forward Unto Dawn and then in Halo 4. Moving on, our first scene to what Forward Unto Dawn is actually about, which is Lasky and the cadets and everything, is we see Lasky waking up after he passed out from the last episode. So we discover that he has an allergic reaction to one of the drugs that he gets injected with when they go into cryo training. And the drug is designed to make sure that your cells don't turn into ice crystals during the cryo freeze. And apparently there's a 1 in 50,000 chance that you are allergic to this drug, and he just happens to be one of those unlucky people.
He doesn't get any breaks.
Nope, he doesn't. So it's pretty bad. After that, we see a video playing of his brother off of one of his deployments, where he lost one of his squad mates day 496 on deployment. And it turns out that Silva is actually watching the message from his brother. Lasky wakes up and is like, "What are you doing?" So we see now here that she's obviously caring, very caring for Lasky here. Really worried about him and his well-being, so much to the fact that she's going in and sneaking in and watching his family's messages.
Yeah.
So, stalker.
Stalker, yes, very much so.
But the message itself I actually found to be really a nice touch in the episode. A lot of people have complained so far about all the teen angst is what the word they used. And I think the second that video log came on and you got to see the voice, the actor who plays his brother give that performance of the emotions that he was feeling immediately after a firefight against his fellow humans, that was a really powerful moment for me. That was when the emotional tone of Forward Unto Dawn really seriously started to turn around.
Does he seem a little conflicted too? I mean, even though he says they're doing good work, it doesn't seem like he's fully convinced of it though.
Yeah, he's trying to convince himself.
Yeah, second guessing every now and then.
Yeah, and I think
which is kind of what Lasky is going through.
Exactly.
But from a slightly different perspective, so it's an interesting parallel there. But I think it also speaks a lot to, I guess, not just the modern, this generation, but anyone who's had to witness the people who have experienced war in any traumatic capacity. It was really, really realistic. It like if you had taken that one part out of this this video clip and played it somewhere else, you could almost believe that it was a soldier fighting in the Middle East. I mean, it was so heartfelt and so genuine and real.
That's what I wrote in my review on that particular section. It felt just like that.
I think it helps to really hit home that this is a real war. And not only that, but it helps to differentiate between the war with the Covenant and the war with the insurrectionist, which is...
Right.
It's got to be much, much harder killing your own species.
Oh, yeah.
But where Lasky is kind of really hanging on to that feeling of why are we killing the Indians? Is this actually the right thing to do? His brother, while he still, it seems like he feels that way, he's still going out there and doing it. Lasky isn't quite to the point yet where he's having to do that, but you can definitely see where, at least it seems that for Tom, it's a lot more of a prominent thought than it is for Cadman.
Yeah.
But definitely. I mean, at this point, Cadman couldn't really object to fighting the war he's in without being a deserter. And that's not really
So Tom is
Cadman's
in the same position, though.
That's what I'm saying is no, I mean, Tom could totally leave at any moment. He's in the academy. He's not in the war. I mean, it's a little bit different to be a deserter from your academy than it is to desert from the battlefield. I mean, you leave the academy, you're not going to be viewed as a coward as much as if you leave the battlefield.
Not only that, but there might not be an option to leave the battlefield for an ODST.
Yeah. How are you going to get out? So
you're not if you're an ODST, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, those pods don't go back up.
No, they do not. All right. After the little video message that we have from Tom's brother, Tom actually shows Silva the freezer burns, and he plays it off immediately. So I'm not exactly sure. It's like he's trying to say that there is something wrong, but he doesn't want to admit it. Like, I'm not sure what the purpose of that specific scene was.
What I read from that was it really spoke a lot to the character of Lasky, who we're obviously going to be seeing in Halo 4. So I think, obviously, half the point of Forward Unto Dawn is to introduce this character, who I imagine will have a rather significant role in Halo 4, and it's more or less been stated that he will. But
right.
It's going to help us so much more knowing where he came from and knowing what kind of character he was, so that when we see what kind of character he is, there's that kind of awareness of the journey that he must have had in between. And that moment with Chyler was to me showing that he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't enjoy fighting in this war or supporting the fight that the UNSC is engaged in. But he's still a very strong individual. He's got a weakness. He's vulnerable, but he doesn't allow himself to be vulnerable because of that.
I think that's an interesting way to look at it. Did not think of it like that. Sorry, what were you saying, Brent?
I think you can view the cryo sickness as almost like a pure plot device, you know, designed to show that Lasky has a way out. You know, whenever he wants, he can just sign off on his, I mean, we'll get into this later, but his papers say he can leave, you know, but eventually he doesn't. We know that he doesn't because, I mean, we just know that Lasky shows up in Halo 4.
Right.
I mean, is that a spoiler or, I mean, we know
no,
that.
No, it's not.
Pretty sure that's not a spoiler. I mean, it's been in the making of the videos. One thing that I think is also interesting about this whole allergy, it means that every time he goes into cryo, he's going to have difficulty breathing and staying conscious immediately after being thawed. And I really wonder if that's going to show up at all in Halo 4. And I think it would be fascinating if they actually really... I guess it's not something that they really need to delve into for the sake of the larger plot, but it would be a nice little nod towards everyone who really gets into and appreciates the extended fiction.
Makes sense. It's just... I don't know. At that time, it just seemed... I guess it's more of a plot device than really there to make... or to really bring out anything. I just found it that since he showed off the freezer burns and then immediately discarded it as nothing, I found that a little odd. Like, why need to just not even show them and say nothing's wrong? That would have made more sense to me to do it that way.
I think he was just trying to kind of play a little bit of a tough guy image there, though. Maybe to Kyler, to impress her a little bit.
That could be as well.
You know, hey, look, I got these wounds, but yet, you know, we still got through it. We still won the exercise earlier in the day.
But it really didn't seem like he cared whether or not they won the exercise. I mean, yeah, he probably was content with it on the inside, but he really didn't show any external emotion to the fact that they won the exercise. It's not portrayed anywhere in the rest of the episode.
I think he was proud of himself for accomplishing something, but then he himself felt that he wasn't allowed to recognize that because his accomplishment was in the name of war, which we know he is opposed to. So that was kind of my reading on that.
All right. Okay, so the next part, Sullivan actually comes over his computer interface and pages him. And he goes to Sullivan, sees that the rest of the cadets are surrounding his computer interface in his room, and we start to see some Oni footage. We've seen little bits and pieces here and there kind of leading up to this, and apparently Sullivan has been able to pull together quite a large collection of video clips. He said it was extremely hard to get and that he was able to break the encryption on the files. So he put it all together and you see this helmet cam of we assumed was a Spartan back in the last episode, and it's pretty much confirmed at this point. So you see this Spartan working with insurrectionists. So the first thing that really catches the cadets off guard is, why are we fighting alongside the insurrectionists now? That's the first thing. And then at the end of the clip, we have a freeze frame on a Spartan.
Can I back up just a little bit, though?
Sure.
Silva and Lasky enter the room, I don't know if you caught the fact that Vickers looks back over at Lasky and kind of gives him a nod. And it's more of one of these things that, you know, hey, truce, you know, we're over our little conflict between each other. It seems like, well, they're not necessarily buddies,
but they're kosher now.
But they have respect for one another.
Yeah, because you kind of see this look then on Lasky. It kind of is like, yeah, okay, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, I really like that moment.
It was like contempt, but yeah, I guess it's a good thing to point that out. I just thought it's like, yeah, that made sense, so I didn't really think much of it. But yeah, it's probably a good thing to point that out.
It's a good part of the character development.
Yeah. Did you guys also notice that, I can't recall if it's an Ennie or Marine, but the one that's thrown up against the wall, he makes the classic Hollywood Wilhelm scream. Have you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
And I chuckled when I heard that part. I always look for that in movies, and it's kind of funny to see that in this.
Oh, in any case,
I honestly did not catch that.
I don't catch it either.
I guess I think he already talks about this, but the Wilhelm scream was also in the David Fincher trailer.
Wait, it was?
Yeah, it was. It's very subtle because they didn't want it to really interfere with the mood. But when Chief is being scanned and the camera zooms in on his face and his skeleton, which is exposed, that you can hear it right there.
Ah, I'm gonna have to go back and listen to that one. Good catch.
That video is weird.
But it's really cool at the same time. But
it is.
Yes, that's not Forward Unto Dawn. So, one other thing that I want to point out before we move on to that recognizable Spartan, the cadets are looking at the footage and this struck me as really important. Instead of saying like, "Who is that? What kind of armor is that guy wearing?" What they were saying was, "What is that? What is that thing? What is it?" And I think
they didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, it's like you couldn't even know that it was human until the point where you saw the helmet. And right. Even then, it's not entirely positive. So it really helps to distinguish that these Spartans are very unfamiliar and almost otherworldly.
Right, because all the only real kind of soldiers on that caliber that the cadets are aware of are ODSTs.
And this is quite different from an ODST.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
I think it's Sullivan that says, you know, he stands 2 feet higher than Marines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
He made that distinction.
And then I also really appreciated the fact that they're finally showing a little bit of combat with the insurrectionists. I mean, we've seen it before in the books, obviously. It's very familiar to us. But to actually see it happening, to see humans shooting at each other and attempting to kill one another, it's something that Halo has shied away from for a long time, but I think at the same time, well, it's been long overdue.
This clip wasn't them shooting at each other. This clip was them shooting at some hidden something.
Watch it again, because in the very beginning, you see the pistol go up and the Spartan is firing it, where I think we can assume it's John from the hand. But John is firing into the dust, into the debris, and you can see the shape of a human there. And this is before anyone gets thrown against the wall. He's firing his pistol at a human, and after that, his hand. When they notice the augmented hand, the hand reaches out and grabs, or is about to grab, a human by the throat, and it's right at that moment that the human, he says, or the insurrectionist says something like, they're coming, or I don't remember the exact quote, but that's the moment where the footage takes a spin and then they start fighting alongside each other. So for the very first part, it is Spartans eliminating insurrectionists, and that's the first time we've visually seen it in any Halo medium.
All right, I guess I missed that one on my watch through.
I think that's something
I've only watched it once.
People forget. You know, a lot of people, that, especially if you haven't been into this series for very long, you're used to just seeing Spartans fighting Covenant, and you forget that the Spartan program was not designed for that. It was designed to fight the insurrectionist. So, like you as well, Isaac, I'm glad that we finally actually got to see this.
It's a very short clip of it.
Very short, but it's good that they're including it.
So I'll have to go back and catch that part, because I do remember seeing an outline of a human, but I didn't necessarily think they were shooting at him.
Yeah, there's like a major shift in combat. I mean, you don't grab a friendly by the throat.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't remember it. I mean, but I remember, like, he grabbed him by the throat and, like, lifted him up. I don't know if that was part of the clip or something, but he's like, yeah, I love it. It's behind me, they're coming. And he lets go, and then he sees the elite coming or whatever, and it shows up on the visor.
I think that was all really well done.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
It was well done, though. The entire clip.
Yeah. They've
been alluding to that clip for the past 3 episodes, though. Or 2 episodes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so Sullivan's been slowly piecing it together.
And for that matter, he's got to be really, really good with computers if he can hack some Oni encryption.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were talking last show, Oni Agent in the making.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Like, that's some serious skill right there. If he doesn't, you know, find some application for that in the Human Covenant War, then that's a wasted character.
He's like, yeah, it was tough, but I did it. It was annoying, but whatever. Let's watch it.
But I do like how it's playing into the rest of the storyline for Forward Into Dawn.
I would actually like to see more of Sully's character.
I would, too.
Some kind of, like, Halo game.
Well, and it's like, how does he react in combat? Because we've only really seen him talking about this Oni footage that he's been piecing together.
Well, I mean, the idea of, like, a comic relief Oni agent is just funny to me. Because, you know, I mean, it's like this ultra-secret organization that knows all this stuff that the rest of mankind doesn't, and Sully's real lighthearted and making jokes all the time. And
it would also be really good to use that as a message. I know Starship Troopers is supposed to be satire, but the first time I watched it, I took it very, very seriously. And I still do from time to time, but there's the character who goes into Naval Intelligence, and he starts out as the jokester, the one who has fun, and then when they finally reconnect with him years later, he's been completely hardened and doesn't have time for jokes. And that would be a similar and interesting progression to show in Halo.
Yeah.
Sullivan would be the right character to do that with, too.
Definitely.
Really, the way these episodes have been going, I'm kind of saddened by the fact that we're only getting five. I'd actually like to see this become a full-blown series.
I always said that I think before they do a Halo movie, I think an HBO miniseries would just be perfect.
Well, we could get like a quote-unquote sixth episode if you buy the limited edition. Or, well, now you can get the DVDs or Blu-rays, too, so...
True.
Yeah, but isn't that only, well, I guess, 15 minutes of extra footage? Yeah, that's another episode.
It's an hour and a half put together, end to end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a full-length film.
Oh, and yeah. I guess I should clarify, when I say HBO, I mean the movie channel.
Yeah, I knew that, yeah. Actual TV, which I don't know if any of us subscribe to. I don't have TV.
I catch it on
box office.
Yeah, right.
I usually just watch stuff through the Xbox.
Yeah, it tends to be one of the easier ways to do it. Hulu, Netflix, all that good stuff. But let's get back on to Forward Unto Dawn. So the next clip I want to play is them discussing what they saw in the mess hall.
What do you think that thing was?
Definitely not an ODST.
Then what could it be?
Maybe some upgraded ODST armor.
Come on, did you not see the size of that thing? That's not ODST.
Guys, look, you're missing the point. What matters is that our soldiers were fighting alongside the insurrectionists. Why would we protect the enemy?
Cadet Lasky, Colonel Mahaffey would like to see you.
So, we basically kind of covered that clip already, but I just wanted to play it so you guys could get the full effect. But the cadets are really unsure what it is. It's unlike any ODST they've ever seen. Sullivan is really digging the fact with the Spartan with his shooting up the place. Your man Silva brings out the point of, why are we fighting alongside insurrectionists? And you can see this kind of thought process start to flow through her head, which I think will be kind of a defining moment for her and through the rest of Forward Unto Dawn kind of going on out here. Because from what it seems like from the past episodes, all she's ever known is that the innies are bad and out to kill them. And now the fact that we're working alongside them, I think, is something that she's not used to and is going to make her at least think for a while.
She's very conflicted there, it seems.
Yes. Very much so.
It almost sounds like when she talks about the insurrectionists, she doesn't actually fully believe what she herself is saying.
You mean when she was talking to Lasky in passing, like for the last two episodes, or what do you mean?
Well, that and the quote, I don't know why I'm having such a hard time remembering all the quotes.
Because it's midnight.
It could be a part of it. I've had a long day. But she mentions how much she hates the innies. It was sometime during this episode. But every time she delivers a line like that, which you would expect to be loaded with a lot of emotion and drama, she always delivers it very casually. And it might be an instance of Anna's acting. But I find that really hard to believe because all the other characters are cast so well into the roles that they're supposed to portray. So I think there's an intention behind why she delivers these lines so casually. It's so much a part of her that she no longer even thinks about why she hates the insurrectionists. It's just a reaction. She just says that, I know I hate them, so I tell everyone I hate them.
We touched on this a little bit in the last cast about it. I think she's kind of become numb to all of this, being that her parents were killed in the battlefield. It's just something that she's just grown with, and it's just become a part of her to the point where she's almost robotic when it comes to talking about the innies. You know, she hates them, but she doesn't need to show emotion why she hates them.
Yeah, that's possible. Or maybe she's even intentionally trying not to take it serious because she knows if she actually takes the time to think about it that it will hurt and it will become emotional.
Okay. I was waiting for someone else to kind of finish up on that one.
Let's all think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Dramatic pause.
But yes, moving on. This one is the discussion that Mahaffey has with Lasky. As you just heard, he got called off, so I'm going to play this one, and we're going to talk about it after I play it.
How are you feeling?
My chest burns, sir. Quite a bit.
This is for you? Seems like you have a choice to make, Thomas.
I don't understand, sir.
It appears Dr. Hughes's test has revealed that the level of your allergy to cytoprethylene is serious enough to warrant a medical discharge. If you feel that you are unfit for service, all you need to do is sign the release and bring it to the tether.
When would I leave?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
You know, Thomas, your memories and choices are all you'll have left. At the end of the game, the king and the pawn go into the same box. You'll have to decide what you're willing to sacrifice.
Axios.
So, he's just been given the golden ticket out of there. But yeah, he doesn't seem very convinced to use it.
I think, other than the plot point of him having an option out of the military, or at least the academy, the quote, what she says to him, at the end of the game, the king and the pawn go in the same...
The same box.
Box? Is it box? Okay.
That, yeah, box.
The second I saw it or heard that quote, I immediately recognized it from Halsey's journal. That's really, really interesting that they inserted it in there like that from a character that, as far as we know, has no relationship to Halsey or Cortana whatsoever, or at least, you know, that we've seen.
Okay, that is a little strange because I haven't read up on Halsey's journal at all to even know that.
Oh, well, what it is when Cortana was created, the very first thing she spoke, and I think I read on HBO, it was in Italian, recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and she says that quote in Italian. That was the first line Cortana ever spoke.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. That is very strange. That is definitely not a coincidence.
Well, no, not at all. I'm wondering if it's going to go anywhere or if that was just thrown in there as a reference, because both are very possible.
So I'm wondering if Mahaffey has some sort of relationship with Halsey or maybe some other Oni ties or...
Someone on HBO was... This is the website now. But someone on HBO was questioning whether this might be Halsey's mother, but of course the timeline doesn't fit because this is 2526, and I believe Halsey would have been around 30 at that time. So it doesn't work like that, but you know, people are asking, people are wondering.
It could just be a very popular saying of the time, or at least within the military. I don't know that I'd read too much into it other than I think it just helps to breed continuity. And of course, there's the.
But do you think 343 would just do something casually like that, though?
Well, they did in Legends. I mean, I guess there's a difference there because that is Halsey, so it has a little bit more fictional relevance. But at the same time, all the quotes from Halsey, you know, "Don't make a girl promise if you can't keep it," that were originally, as far as we knew, Cortana's, but now we find out they're actually just memories of Halsey. Again. That indicates that it has a little bit more resonance within the fiction, but it strikes me as similar.
I just don't think 343 would casually put something in there like that. We know how these great minds work. They put stuff in there for a specific reason. So I'm assuming there has to be some kind of reason behind it.
Yeah, well, in that case, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of that.
exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Episode 4 or 5.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, hopefully. I don't know. They might be too busy fighting the Covenant, being rescued by the Chief. On a slightly related note, I have a challenge for you guys. Can anyone pronounce the name of that drug? Because I sure can't.
No.
I'd have to go back and listen to it.
I'll leave that to just listening to it in the episode, and that's it. Yeah. I will not try to pronounce it.
Tetrodotoxin? No, that's something else. Never mind.
I'm just not going to try. I don't think there's any reason for me to memorize how to say that drug. Anyway, moving on.
Cytopropylene. That's how I would say it.
That's a good attempt. I'm sure Loftus would be able to tell us, like, exactly.
Cytopropylene.
Well, yeah. Moving on, we see Tom go back to his room, and then he plays a video on his computer interface back from the time that he got information that his brother died. The funny thing is, though, it's from his mother. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah.
And there's, like, almost no emotion to it. It's almost like she's talking from one soldier to another, just like...
She's very businesslike.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I think that speaks a lot to the character of Lasky, why he, out of all these kind of, you know...
It shows kind of
like pointy edged military types. He has so much character. And that's not to say the other cadets don't have character as well, but for him specifically, I think that can almost indicate why he is the way he is. Because growing up in an environment where you don't have much emotional interaction, it can almost cause you to want to have that release somewhere else.
And it kind of shows off a little bit of the resentment that he has, because if you remember from the first episode that we saw, he tells Mahaffey that he wouldn't know what his mother thinks, that he doesn't see her that much. I think now seeing this, there's really kind of a resentment there. It's like, well, why do I have to live up to this name when my mother doesn't even treat me like an actual son?
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree with that 100%.
And then his brother is really the only family that he had now. And the fact that he lost that is probably devastating.
And this video that he's watching, too, I don't believe this is the first time he heard it. I mean, this, I think, is just a replay.
No, this is definitely a replay.
You know, from the first episode, his brother was already dead. And he's just playing these as a way to remember his brother and kind of going in chronological order. And he came back to this one again with his mom.
Yeah. Well, it also kind of goes through to define or give a little bit more background on why he feels a certain way about the insurrectionists and the war that they're having against the other humans. And then it kind of goes into explains the whole ODST comment that he made during the lesson from the episode last week.
Right.
So it all really comes together now with these two videos. The one that we saw with his brother at first, and now this one from his mother announcing his brother's death.
It goes back even further than that too, if you recall when Silva talks about the insurrectionists in the first episode when they're in his room, and she says, "You don't even know the insurrectionist." And then he's like, "Well, I have a pretty good idea." And obviously she knows that his brother's dead at that point too. So she realizes she made a mistake by saying something like that.
It's all coming together, people. All right. Moving on. In the middle of the video, he gets interrupted by Sullivan, who comes in and is like, "I have to show you this. I have to show you this now." Pulls up the same only footage that he's seen before, the freeze frame on the Spartan, and a few seconds in, it focuses on the helmet. And what do we see in the helmet? We see an energy sword.
So, yeah, and I didn't notice that when they first showed Fred.
I didn't see it at first either. I had to go back and rewatch it, but the second time I saw it, there's an elite with an energy sword. So the first time they were like, oh, what's that person standing there? What kind of armor is that? What kind of person is that? And then Sullivan comes back and his sleuth detective skills, he sees something in the reflection and he pulls that out. And Lasky, after it takes him a few seconds to realize it as well, but he starts to wonder what's going on. And just about as he figures out that it's something that he's not, that he doesn't know about, it's something alien, his terminal gets shut off. And Sullivan kind of freaks out a little bit because he wonders if Oni has found him now, and he's like, oh, crap. And then he tries to go to... Yeah, then he goes, runs off to Dima's like, Dima, did you tell your mother? So this is, yeah, we have in that reflection of the helmet, which is, it's kind of hard to tell. They made the effect in the video and on the helmet really well. I really liked how they made it hard to really kind of pull that out. But the fact that it's there and that Sullivan noticed it, that's, I want to see something happen with Sullivan and Oni. Like in the fourth or near the end of the fifth episode, he gets pulled away by Oni agents in like some like dark alley somewhere in the academy or something like that with intel.
I think that'd be a little difficult with the Covenant running around, but I agree that it wouldn't be as satisfying if that thread wasn't followed to the end.
Yeah, I would like to see something with that happen. So he goes off, tries to meet up with Dima, and then Lasky goes, looks for Siler. She's not in her room, so he walks outside, and this is the next clip I want to play.
Hey.
Do I give your spot a try? Com didn't make any sense. Hating the innies is all I've ever known. Did you tell Mahaffey about it?
No. No.
What's that?
Apparently, I'm allergic to war.
What does this mean? You're leaving?
Yeah, tomorrow if I sign it.
Are you going to?
I don't know. Tyler.
It's okay. I know you don't want to be here. I just thought that maybe... I miss you.
A few things happened in that clip. First off, Silva, more specifically, she's still trying to wrap her head around the idea that we are working with the innies now, or some part of the UNSC is fighting alongside the insurrectionists. She asks Tom if he's told Mahaffey about the footage. He hasn't yet. And then he shows her the letter. The one that's basically his golden ticket out of there. Little exchange goes on. You can hear just the sadness in her voice about him contemplating whether or not he wants to leave. Then, obviously, he says he's not sure about whether or not he's going to do it. She says, I'll miss you, and then, of course...
They kiss.
Yes, indeed. So we saw this coming.
What? I didn't see it coming. It caught me off guard. That was really,
really?
Out of left field. No, not really.
I was going to say.
So, and it was just perfect timing, too, because then, like, 10 seconds after they started making out, the sirens go off to evacuate.
Yeah, I really like that, because I almost view it as almost a meta sort of message that the director or whoever, you know, was responsible for that scene was giving to the audience. Because, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the complaints about Forward Unto Dawn so far have been that there's too much teen angst. And you know, what do you expect from a teen angst movie? Well, there's got to be a scene where the romance comes to a head and they kiss. That's expected, right?
Yeah, and that's what happened.
And it happens, and just as it gets to that point, it's almost like the film itself realizes where it has to go after that point and says, wait a minute, no. This is Halo. Let's bring the Covenant in.
I was waiting for a record scratch at the moment. They're like, wait a minute.
All right, and that's more or less what they did, just in a more subtle way.
Right.
What a twist.
What a twist.
What was that?
Sorry, my dog came in and shook her chain.
Oh, that's
all right. Bad dog.
That's all right. So, yeah, makeout scene, everything. And then we have the evacuation alarm. So they go run up to the tether. The squad is called together, and they have no idea what's going on other than that they're evacuating for some reason.
Yeah, and thus begins one of the best scenes in any Halo production ever.
Yes.
This is fantastic. So at first, there's power flickers throughout the complex, and you see ODST drops from the sky. And everyone's looking around, it's like, why are ODSTs dropping? And everyone's thinking this is not a good sign.
And Kyler even says that out loud.
Yeah. After that, Dima decides to go sprint off and get on the space elevator going up. Threatens one of the Marines that her mom is a
Secretary figurehead. Of Fleet Comm.
Yeah. I forgot what the rank was, but yeah. So she's a big wig, and if he didn't let her on, he might face some consequences. But it didn't quite matter, because shortly after lifts off, you see three Covenant Corvettes appear above in the sky, and they just take the tether out. They just completely obliterate the space elevators.
Oh, man, and what an impressive, like, sequence is that. Like, I still get the chills just picturing it in my head. This is one of the most intimidating, frightening, and altogether realistic portrayals of the Covenant that I've seen. I mean, we've seen a lot, but this one just blew me away. And what I really want to bring to people's attention, especially if you didn't notice it the first time or however many times you have watched this so far, the sound design during this part is so phenomenal. The way that the tether collapses and you can just hear the cords ripping and whipping through the air. And then the laser shot, the pulse laser from the Corvette sounds so alien and clean and just completely opposite of all the grittiness that we've been seeing so far. Everything about the sound design during that one sequence is so good and helps to really immerse you in that moment.
Yeah, I got to agree with you there.
I just like how the scene was executed, because I thought how they brought the Corvettes in. I mean, you kind of had a feeling of what the timing was going to be like on that, but just the way that it got executed was flawless.
Yeah, and I didn't anticipate that they were going to have full-fledged ships, because at the beginning of the first episode, we see that trail come down through the sky, and I thought, oh, well, this is just going to be a small team of elites that are dropped in like a drop pod or something.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so it's interesting seeing that shot from the first one. Yeah, I mean, it would be cool to really explore what exactly that was. Maybe they will, but
I want to say I have a reason to think it's probably a Seraph fighter.
It almost seems like it comes down and then hovers for a little bit, but it could just be shooting straight towards the camera. So.
Well, I don't think a Banshee would be that fast, but I think a Seraph fighter could be.
I don't think a Banshee would be able to withstand orbital entry.
No, quite frankly. I think a serif would, though.
Yeah, it seems like it would be shaped well to withstand that sort of pressure.
Yeah,
I'm still thinking drop pod, and if you recall and reach the discussion between Carter and Halsey talking about there being advanced teams of elite zealots, that's what I think it is. I think it's actually that advanced team. They were probably scouting out the base and then let their let the rest of the fleet know, okay, this is a good time to attack, and then that's when the three corvettes come out.
Oh, you're right. That does fit really well. Not only that, but during Long Night of Solace, when you're attacking the corvette, you can see the drop pods shooting out from the bottom of it. And,
right.
And they don't shoot straight down. They actually do shoot down into the atmosphere and then kind of maneuver and turn into the clouds, just like this one does. So that really fits well with the corvettes that show up later.
It doesn't really hover, though, right?
Well, I don't know. It either hovers or it begins to move towards the camera, and the trail disappears behind it. So I'm not exactly sure.
Now that's what I see. I see it just changing direction, and you're losing some of that.
You would have thought, though, if it impacted somewhere, someone would have felt it, though.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, we know that... I mean, I guess with the drop pods that we've seen from the Corvette, that would make sense. But if they were far enough away, it's possible that they might not have picked it up. Also, the drop pods that we've seen in Halo 4, which a lot of the designs for Forward Unto Dawn are coming from Halo 4, those drop pods actually have thrusters that can pick back up and shoot the pod back up.
Yeah, but it's not that maneuverable, is it?
No. Well, I've only seen a few clips, so I don't really know.
It really seems like the base has also let its guard down enough to the point where they never saw this invasion coming.
Well, I disagree with
you. Well, this is an inner colony, right? I don't think there's a...
Well, they haven't specified, is this an outer colony? Have they? I guess it would be an inner colony, given that this is the children of officers and whatnot. I don't think that they would be deploying their children to an academy that's in the midst of a war zone. Yeah,
I think I want to say it's probably an inner colony.
Well,
which would be why they're so surprised.
Well, I don't think they were surprised, and that's what I was going to say. Throughout the first episodes, you've been seeing Colonel Black actually stationing troops around the academy. And this might have been easily passed off as just kind of like training or just kind of like a ceremony.
Well, I knew he was doing something. Cause...
But it really seems like all of the higher-ups at this academy know that something is going on. And I feel like there's an interesting subplot there that hasn't quite been brought to light yet.
You would think, though, that with a lot of these military kids out there, with the other high-ranking military officials who sent their kids here, you would think that they would at least do something to keep them a little bit more protected, or at least tell them something.
I don't know. Like, as you're saying, it's Oni. They're not exactly the most trustworthy people whenever they're involved.
That is true. That is true. But let's go ahead and kind of wrap this up real quick. After the space elevator gets taken out, you see the building that the tether is in. Everything kind of starts to fall apart. People are running away, kind of panicking. A little bit while later, you see out the window that there is an elite outside with an energy sword walking up to the Corbulo statue and just cuts it in half.
To put it mildly.
Yeah. That was really, really impressive. I feel like the elite was making a bit too much noise when he walked. I don't think they would be quite that loud or heavy. Obviously, they're big creatures, but I don't think it would be a thud like that. That's more like a hunter to me. But maybe
I think that was more just kind of for effect, theatrical effect.
Probably. But I'm all about detail.
So, and then we end on a scene where all the windows overhead start to break from, I guess, what the debris falling from the tether.
And bodies.
More than just debris, yeah.
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 That's one of the most disturbing things that I've seen in Halo. And I mean, that's keeping the Flood in mind, too. I mean, the Flood are disturbing, but this is disturbing on a different level.
You can even hear the people screaming, too.
Screaming as they come in, yeah.
That was definitely, like you said, very disturbing.
Which is exactly as it should be. I think I almost feel like this entire setup was intentional, that they set up these teenage characters and all the, I'm just going to say it again, all the teen angst, and they set your expectations on that. And then halfway through this episode, they just switch it on its head. And that was planned the entire time. That's what I feel. I don't know for sure, but I feel like they did that on purpose so that the impact of the Covenant arriving would be that much more brutal.
What a word, impact.
So funny.
What happens?
Too soon.
I think they're definitely ready to grow up if they haven't already right now.
Yeah, seriously.
Yep. They basically just have been called into action.
I can't wait to see where it goes next.
Mm-hmm. No, it's going to be interesting. But if we look at the... Look, next week, we're going to see a familiar Spartan come into the play.
Yay!
You guys should know who he is, but just in case you don't, I'm not going to spoil it.
I can't wait to see Daniel Cudmore's performance, though. I mean, I've been looking forward to that since I found out that it was actually going to be a in-suit actor rather than CG. So I really hope he pulls it off, because that's a difficult role to take on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's pretty big as it is. Isn't he like 6'7 or something like that?
I think so, yes.
I mean, he's huge. He played the role of Colossus in the X-Men movie, so you know he's got to be a big dude.
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, he is. They even mentioned that on the interviews that Green Skull, Grim Brother 1, and Cool Legacy did.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
It's gonna be awesome. The only thing I'm a little apprehensive about is the voice acting. The voice acting needs to be nailed pretty well.
Yeah,
Steve Downs.
It's a tough role to have to take on.
I don't know.
Big shoes to fill.
I don't know if Daniel Cudmore is doing the voiceovers.
No, I think it's somebody different.
Someone
else.
I
don't think they've even stated, as far as I remember.
But they need to nail that one on the head.
Yeah. Well, the little bit that we've heard in little trailers and bits here and there, I don't think it sounds too bad. It sounds like a younger Chief.
Which is exactly what they were aiming for.
So, you know, it can't necessarily be exactly like Steve Downs, because we're talking about something that happens,
20 years or so before Halo?
15, 20 years before the original trilogy, certainly, and then a few more years before Halo 4. So,
I agree.
If he still has a little bit of that gruffness in it, then I think it'll come across well. And like I said, from the little bits, you might have heard from some of the other trailers, it sounds okay. It'll work.
Oh, yeah.
It'll work.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, any last things you guys want to bring up about this? I think we just about covered everything.
I do. I want to ask one question. Did Dima know about the Covenant before the other cadets did?
Boy, that's a good question.
Because think about it. She freaked out when the attack started. I mean, before the Covenant ship even broke in. And she would have had... with her parents and those high positions in Fleet Comm and Oni, she seemed like she knew that the Covenant was coming and that they were going to decimate everything there. She might not have known about the Spartan program.
Here's the thing then. Okay, since you're mentioning that, why in the hell would she take the space tether up? If there's going to be an invading force, I mean...
Because she wants to get out.
Yeah, you want to get out, but, if the invading force is coming from above, I certainly wouldn't want to go up there, because that's, once you're in, you're locked in. That's it.
But that's another thing, is if she does know about the Covenant, she's likely to know about glassing, in which case she knows she does not want to be on the ground.
Ah, well, that's true too, then.
Or it could just be her young mind taking over. It's like, oh, I need to get out of here quickly.
But it just seemed completely against character. Because she seemed real confident and, aggressive throughout the series, and then all of a sudden she decides to coward out.
I guess weird. I guess you could read into it a lot. I don't know that I think that was intentional, but that's an interesting point to think about.
I'm just saying, out of all of the other cadets that would have possibly known about the Covenant, she might, I mean, she was the most eligible candidate to know.
But do you really think that these officers would tell their children if they knew the sort of threat that it posed to humanity?
Maybe. I don't know.
I guess you could look at it either way.
I mean, if you've seen the kind of destruction that the Covenant was, you know.
Well, and also, if you're born into an Oni family, you're pretty much Oni, I would think. I wouldn't think there would be an easy way to get out of it.
I mean, she was the only one with the kind of the kind of family that would be able to, you know, go up to another Marine and be like, look, I'm going to get on this elevator whether you want me to or not, you know.
Maybe it's just, her parents are the only one that are that high up. You know, Lasky's mom is a colonel, but she's by no means the secretary of Fleet Comm, you know.
Yeah. It just seems like in that scene, Demon knew about the Covenant and the threat that they posed.
That's a very good point.
Interesting concept.
I really didn't read into that, but now that you mention it, it does throw off a couple of questions. And I would almost want to say that at some point she probably went back and did tell her mom about the footage that Sullivan found. I wouldn't imagine with her knowing that her mom works for Oni that she would not tell her that.
I wouldn't trust her.
I wouldn't.
Why do you think Sully was like, don't tell your mom! Don't tell your mom!
Yeah, and then at the end of this, when he was showing Lasky, he goes running off to Dino. It's like, did you tell your mom? So.
All in all, very good episode, though. A lot of intense imagery and action. And
there's a lot of stuff that was going on.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch the whole thing as a, you know, feature-length film.
As a whole unit, yes. I'm looking very much forward to the extended cut. So, all right. That will wrap up the show for us today, guys. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can find us at our website, podtacular.com. You can also check out our forums. We also have Monday Night Matchmaking for the next 2 Mondays up until the launch of Halo 4. So we start off playing some Reach Matchmaking, then head over to some Customs, and then if people want to, we do some a little bit of Halo 3. That starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. You can also check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/podtacular, on Facebook, facebook.com/podtacular, and on YouTube, youtube.com/podtactv. I don't know what our next video is at the moment, but there is a few videos out from 343 this week, so you will probably find some videos this weekend or throughout next week. I do have some footage that I captured from New York Comic Con as well, so you may see that coming up soon on the YouTube channel.
And also don't forget to tune in sometime next week to hear an exclusive podcast about Community Evolved. Shameless plug.
Fair enough.
You can always check me out too at HaloFanForLife.com, where I do extensive reviews on Forward Unto Dawn as well as a graphic novel for each episode. Another shameless plug.
Very nice. Not too shabby. All right. Thank you guys again for listening, and until next time, keep on fragging those trucks.
Keep on fragging Dima.
Yes.
That's something entirely different.
And now for something completely different.